Welcome back to the Coaches Rising podcast. Today, I'm joined by Annemiek van Helsingden, and this was a fascinating conversation for me. We're going to be exploring the realm of soul-based coaching. This is a deeply embodied approach to coaching, leveraging the potency of metaphor, influenced by the clean language movement, and an approach that helps us tap into a wider field of knowing. So I hope you enjoy this as much as I did. Annemiek van Helsingden is a longtime coach and educator. She's the founder and CEO of the Academy for Soul-Based Coaching, where she and her global team offer coach education with phenomenal results, reaching thousands of coaches, therapists, and healers. The last thing I want to say is you can visit coachesrising.com to see our acclaimed online trainings, our other offerings, or join our ever-expanding community of transformational coaches. Okay, let's dive right in. Before we get into today's podcast, I've got an invitation for you. We're about to kick off the sixth edition of our most popular program, The Neuroscience of Change. This training is based on what revolutionary research in neuroscience has revealed about transformational coaching, essentially showing us what works, what doesn't, and why. In the program, you'll learn what happens in the brain and body when different coaching techniques are used, how to guide your clients into positive learning states that allow genuine change to occur, and why some tried and true coaching methods actually inhibit change and what we can do instead. We created this course because I learned things from the lead teacher, Amanda Blake, that truly revolutionized the way I coach. And every year, she and all the teachers bring in new, cutting-edge science that continues to illuminate the process of transformation. Amanda will be joined by the rest of our world-class faculty of coaches and neuroscientists for this program, including Dan Siegel, Alan Fogel, Claire Dale, David Trelevin, and Richard Boyatzis. It's going to be an amazing, transformative journey. So I hope you'll come and join us. You can head to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. The first class is February 25th, 2025 with Amanda Blake. And if you sign up by February the 7th, you can get the early bird discount. So just go to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. Annemiek, sir. Real pleasure to have you with us today. How do I find you right now? How are you?
Oh, I'm very happy to be here, Joel. It's a beautiful October morning. Sunshine is incredible. I'm very aware of that time passing also with the seasons. So I'm just in that mode of leaning back into where the flow is taking us at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good move to make. We're in the same country, so I have the same beautiful autumn morning. It's kind of very welcome after the last few days of heavy rain and wind. So,
yeah.
Let's get right into. We're going to talk today about this mode of coaching that you brought into the world, soul-based coaching, and I feel an affinity with that name. So I'm really excited about our conversation. I thought just to begin with, maybe to ask you about the journey that led you to create this in a kind of, you know, somewhat brief or summarized form, because it's a whole life journey from maybe previous lifetimes as well. So, you know, we could really go to town with that. But yeah, what was this journey that led you to birth this mode?
Yeah, I love the question, and also the the recognition that it is something that is potentially part of a much wider conversation. And I think this is true for many things and for many people. But in this lifetime, I started my career as a consultant and as a facilitator of change processes. And I did this in corporations, and I was very intrigued by why do people do what they do, especially when it's not working, right? They're aware it's not working. They say they want something else. And yet what we see again and again is that they're not able to make changes happen. You know, they might throw in a project or have, you know, a very good idea about what they want to do, but then Fast forward a couple of months or a year, and very often we kind of see the same behavior coming back, and be really being enforced in the whole system. So that kind of got me curious about what is needed for people to make changes that last, that are sustainable, that they can build on for their future. And that brought me into some very interesting fields. For example, the work of David Grove, Clean Language, and Symbolic Modeling, which is a way of using clean language with embodied metaphors. Now, I'll talk a little bit more about that later, maybe if you find that interesting. But what happens with when we start to use clean language? And with clean language, what that means is that David Grove was a New Zealand-based therapist, psychotherapist in the 1980s who worked with trauma survivors. And what he noticed in his work that the closer he got his clients to the traumatic experience, the more they started to speak in metaphor. And so he got very curious about why is that? Why is that happening? And what if that is a sign of a healthy, functioning human psyche? What can I do to honor that and find out what these metaphors are here for? And so he started to experiment with his language and his way of asking questions. And the questions that came out of that process, the clean questions, they are phrased in ways so that there is as little as possible interference of the coach or the therapist staff into the conversation. And it was remarkable what started to happen when he did that, because these metaphors started to have a life of their own and started to point to healing powers within the client system that were available to clients. And when we kind of start to work with that, I started to bring that into my corporate work, which was fabulous because all of a sudden we're no longer working with outside models or agendas, but we're starting to work with what's inside people. What is the inner drive, the innate desire, but also what are the innate resources and capacities that are present for our clients that they can tap into if they know where they are and if they're not distracted by all of the models and things that we put onto them. And what happens then is like it's an organic process of change that starts to unfold, which is it's still after, well, I've been engaged with this work for 20 years now. It still blows my mind when I work with my clients in that way.
Could I just interrupt your story and we'll pick it up after, but could you give me an example of like some clean questions and
Absolutely.
maybe even how, like what you've seen, an example with a client, tapping into these healing powers, how that
Yeah,
goes?
and I'll tell more about that also when I just there's just one more piece when it comes to
Sure.
soul-based coaching that kind of slots in there. But the soul-based the clean language questions in themselves are very simple. So for example, a clean question is what kind of is that? So it be could be what kind of inspiration is that inspiration that you're looking for? So the key point here is that we work with these questions and only literal words that our clients share. So we don't actually use our own words into the conversation. So while we do that, we start to model our clients' experience. We start to really try and understand their experience from the inside out. And more importantly, we help our clients experience their experience from the inside out. And that means that we are building their own models of the world with them, and they start to see where change becomes possible. Now, one of the examples from my corporate work was it's actually a really funny situation because it was a client that had worked with us before and called us back in because they'd come up against a really tricky situation. This was a government organization, like high level, that had to deliver on a certain thing for which they needed a subcontractor. And there was a big conflict had arisen between these two parties. But that needed to be sorted out. There was a lot of money on the line. There was a timeline that was pretty constricted as well. And when our client hired us, they kind of went, well, we know that you can do this because of our experiences before. For one thing, don't do the metaphor thing with us. Like that's just it doesn't fit the situation and the context. So sure, we don't do metaphor. And we got in the room for the first day of like this is a couple of days away. We sat into the room and we just did a checking in with the people in the room. And literally the first person starting to speak was saying, "Well, you know what? I'm pretty frustrated because I feel like you want a Corvette, but you're only willing to pay us for like a simple mini van." And there we were. We had exactly the structure of the conflict in the room, and different people related to that situation differently. But once you have a metaphor in the room that comes from inside the client's system, the situation changes drastically. So there is just a tiny example of how that suddenly became a situation where you can tap into the conversation in a metaphoric realm rather than talk about all the conceptual, like this is the agreements, this is the this is the things that we're beholden to, this is our responsibility, that part of the conversation, and the emotional side of the conversation, because the metaphors kind of hold all of these things. They're like zip files that are full and rich of meaning, individual meaning. But with these clean language questions, you can start to unpack all of the information that's in there. And it becomes a very effective and quick way of working with what's alive in the room. So that's a short and very memorable experience in a corporate team setting. But you can equally do this work one-to-one. And then when we go into metaphor, we start to dive into really the deepest parts of people's experiences in a very easy way and actually in a light way as well. So once I started doing this, this quite quickly people started coming up to us and say, "Well, can you train us in what you do?" And so we started training people in this work. And I say we, this is with two of my former colleagues as well. And if you'd asked me then, I would have said, I'm like a fish in water. I'm exactly where I need to be in my life. And that was until the moment when my health kind of kicked in and said, "Oh no, we're not doing this." So my immune system started to give me serious trouble, and I had to stop being in that corporate life. And that really brought me to a couple of years of figuring out what am I here to do? Because I knew I was not here to sit behind the windowsill, as we say in Holland. I'm here to serve. And so I had to really be very, very meticulous and find out, so what is it that I am here to do? And I had very direct feedback from my body, where if I did too much, it would kind of come and step in and go, "No, you're back in bed." Or if I did something that wasn't aligned enough, it would kind of go, "No." And so this brought me to a place where I started to see that when people ask me again, "Can you train me in what you used to do?" I was kind of like, "Yes, and it needs to be different than it was before." And this was when I really started to see how, all the time I was working in corporate, I was also on my own spiritual journey, on my own journey of awakening, of making sense of parts of of my life that didn't make sense based on what I had learned in university and what I was learning in my corporate job, which a world of energy, a world of healing, and what does that mean? What is needed for that, and various modalities of doing that. But also, how do I relate to life? How do I relate to this experience, this incredible experience of being alive in a human body? And that brought me to practices that were embodied practices that just really brought me home to me. And what I noticed was that some of these practices are universal, that are not just from one spiritual delineation or from one dogma. They're part of multiple spiritual disciplines around the world. And when I notice if we bring just a little bit of that into the coaching space not only made it possible for me to teach, but I also saw that it was possible for my students to learn much easier. And then we started to see that actually for our clients, the effects also started to deepen. And this is when I started to see, well, actually, okay, so this needs a name. So yes, okay. Let's then find what that name is, and eventually came to soul-based coaching.
I'd love to ask you about the embodiment, and we'll get right into metaphor, I think, more deeply in terms of how that, what possibilities that opens up. But could you just say a bit more here about where soul came in? You know, because I hear in your journey, you know, this has been true in my life, and I see people around me that often these breakdowns in health or, you know, that's actually the place where soul begins to kind of burst through. And so, but I'm just curious if you could say more about soul, how it came in, what it means to you, and how it shows up in the work. Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a broad question. You know, and honestly, I hesitated for a long time before I chose that word because it feels like a big claim to make. So I tried to find like literature and like crossovers between the professional world of coaching and then kind of that more mystical and spiritual experience. And it was not easy to find. What I noticed was that on my path, my spiritual path, and I'm one of the very core values in clean language is that my experience isn't any better than yours. And so especially when it comes to our spiritual experiences as human beings, like spiritual beings in the flesh or however we want to signify that, we all have our own experience. And so my experience of it is not to be a dogma for anyone else. So I'm very happy to share about my journey, but I want to really make this very clear that part of this work is about honoring that we are spiritual beings. Now, all of us, whether we're aware of it or not, have a relationship to that part of us that is intangible, that part of life that we can't quite put our finger on, but we kind of know there is more to it. And what story we tell ourselves or what tradition we find ourselves at home with in terms of explaining what that is, they're all game as far as I'm concerned. And so for me, what soul, how that came in is part of my journey was about the feminine embodied spirituality. So that means, you know, th there is a lot of traditionals in spirituality that are about distracting yourself from physical life, right? So kind of the traditional in cave in the Himalayas, transcendental meditation, like releasing yourself from what the flesh tells us. This is the obvious, the opposite. This is about, okay, so my life is living in a female body, and what does that give me as an entry point into the much wider world of being alive in a human body in this time. And that came with a lot of embodied practices. It also brought me to the path of priestessing and the path of ritual, the path of, for example, firewalks and being a firewoman for big fires of sweat lodges, for example. And so there was a lot of ritual on my path. And what I noticed is that when you engage in ritual that is meaningful to you, that you get to a point where a lot of the everyday chatter falls away. A lot of the everyday doubts and fears start to kind of be noticed for what they are. And there is a very different place in ourselves where we start to know and relate to the world in a very different way from. And for me, that is the realm of soul. So that is the realm where we are connected to a much wider field of knowing, where we are also connected to ourselves as not broken. There is a very real experience of ourselves as being whole, being part of life as a whole. And when we tap into that field of knowing, then it brings a huge change within our state in that moment. But also, there is a lot of resourcefulness and insight and knowing that becomes available that we can carry through into our everyday experiences. And so, what I was seeing that was when we were working with our clients in these ways, that actually they tapped into that same field. That experience of wholeness was right there, that we could help them tap into that with a lot of ease and very dependent, consistently. And so that is when I decided, okay, that is the word that is actually, it's the appropriate word. It's the word that is fitting for this effect, for this, what is made possible when we hold space for our clients in this way.
Yeah, that's rich. Before I ask you about the, in a way, getting into more granularity with working with clients, I said I had an affinity with this word, and I feel we checked in, in our check-in before we hit record, you spoke of this, the importance of soul in our times. I'm curious for you how you see that. For me, I've been kind of reflecting and immersing myself in different paths. And I love that you talk about this kind of more embodied spirituality, because I feel like that's another call in our times of, I certainly feel in my own path, like that just transcending the world, it's not satisfying. So for me, what is it to kind of like heal that split between spirit and matter and actually there's a kind of immanence and full participation in life that's possible. And I've found that complementary to kind of more meditative practices, when I started to go on what I would call my own soul path, which was, more poetic and like there's a re-enchantment of life and an animism of life and a sense of almost like a juiciness coming back online, and where there was a sense of full participation in service of life, like there was a in service of something bigger than myself. And so there's just the last thing before I come bring back to the question was like what I noticed was like in some of the spiritual communities, it was a bit dry, like there was a lot of like kind of ascendance and but it was kind of nice and dry. And then I met these soul infused communities and they were like, whoa, they were just kind of like standing up and starting to speak, and they were just as if they were falling off a cliff. They would be like brothers, sisters. And then there would something would start to come through them, as they would, and I was like, this is amazing, but they also had some sides that I was like, oh, if they could get a bit of more of the stuff the meditation people have got, that would really
Yes.
help, so.
Yes. Yes. Oh, I love it. I love how your eyes are coming to life and how your whole body is starting to revel in the juiciness of soul. And I think this is part of what we're reclaiming together. What we can reclaim together is that for me, it's about a path of wonder, and it's about a path of seeing. It's like a metaphor that comes with a lot of like e at the moment, but there's like an awakening out of like patterns that we're just habitually habitating in, and kind of waking up to actually the sun is shining, and not as a concept of the mind, but actually kind of feeling how my cells respond to that reality of the sun shining in this moment, as it is October, whatever it is today. And feeling, to me, it's almost like feeling the aliveness like through all my cells. It's real, it's right here, it's happening. And life is full of dark and light, it's full of beauty and horror, it's full of things where we don't know where we are in despair, or where we are in full expectation of something beautiful. And I think part of what this work is about reclaiming that, yes, all of this is it. And in the middle of it is something that is very steady and stable. And this is where the more meditative practices come in for me, which is that in the practice of holding space, as a practice, not as a buzzword, in the practice of being simultaneously present with myself and with you, something becomes possible where that field of aliveness starts to be the field that nourishes both of us, actually, and where change becomes possible in a very different way, in a very different frequency, I was going to say, but let's put it, let's not say that. So this is where, and I think one of the things that I love about the work that I do, and this maybe brings us to a little bit more of that granularity, is that it is actually a very robust method and modality of working with. So you have to be, what I said earlier, we work just with clean language questions and our clients' literal words. So if you just kind of think about, okay, so I'm in a situation with a client, I'm holding space for them, I am training myself to be exquisitely present to that moment. Ongoing training, by the way. And then I have these questions. I listen really, really well to what they're saying. I'm not going to analyze or interpret what they're saying, but I'm going to help them build their own model of what their experience is in embodied metaphor. And then from that, what's going to happen is that both their problems are going to be present in embodied metaphor and how they'd like things to be. And these metaphors start to, they're alive. They start to work with one another. They start to talk to each other. They start to inform one another. And this is the part where, which is our job, which is creating a riverbed that supports that organic change. That's when the change starts to happen in metaphor. And the problem metaphors start to morph into what the client would like to see happen. And that's like such an incredible process, because what happens when when we see the metaphors change is that we're actually working with like the primary operating system of our client's mind, body, and soul. It's like we change the pathways to how they are experiencing life. And as a result, they're going to do things differently in their life. They're going to think, feel differently. They're going to see different things. And I can give you an example of that if that helps. So something I was just reminded of recently was a client who came to me because he had substantial issues with his romantic life. So, and when I started to ask him about what it was like for him, he shared that it was like being in a war room. Like being in a relationship to him was like being in a war room, where he's trying to get the overview of the situation and trying to figure out what actions would give the best results for the relationship succeeding. Now, I don't know about you, but if I listen to that, my body response to that is like, I don't want to be in relationships that are like that. Like that doesn't sound very interesting to me, or much of much fun, or even very effective in terms of, you know, let's make a relationship a successful relationship.
I mean,
And
unless
so,
you're in the army, you're in the in a real war or something, but yeah, totally.
exactly right. Yes, exactly. But let that not be every day, please. And so when he started to think about, so how would he like it to be? He came up with the, well, like dancing a tango, which was about, you know, like some, well, mostly him leading, but maybe it could be, you know, sometimes the partner leading as well. But it was something about being very close, being very attuned to one another, like body and soul, and in a, in an atmosphere of music and fun and exploration. And so you can start to immediately, like I can start to feel how my body responds to that. It's like, ooh, like now you're talking. Now we're getting somewhere that might be a lot more interesting. I'd probably kind of expand that metaphor if it were to be mine, with let's have a time to sit down and both get a cup of tea or a drink or something else at times. But again, our metaphors are all uniquely different, and what's my ideal relationship right now would be totally different from that anyway. But when we start to work with that relationship, then we can start to really help the client embody what it's like to be in a relationship that is like dancing that tango. And you can start to feel the state of the client in that moment to really start to embody that, inhabit that. And when they're doing that, they're creating the neural pathways that go along with it. They're having that experience in the moment of what it's like to do that. When we then start to kind of go, and then there's the war room. And then kind of go, so what's needed for a war room to get to tango? And do that within metaphor. Then the metaphor of the tango starts to inform the person who's in the war room and kind of lures them into the tango. In this case, that's what kind of happened. It was kind of like a no. Here it's much. You could hear the music coming into the war room and starting to kind of, there was a bit of like, okay, then I have to let go of this thing that gives me safety, which is that overview in the war room. But okay, actually my curiosity, I kind of understand that this isn't it. And this is not me telling him that, but he was realizing actually not the best breeding grounds for good relationships. So he started to follow the music, and this was a big thing for him. He was also a musician, and it, like as part of his hobbies, and that brought him into a dance hall, and that brought him into actually dancing the tango. And from that moment on, like in the session, you can start to see how the whole physiology changes, how what the client pays attention to changes, how there also becomes there's like a centered calm that is part of this, actually all the time, and that then helps the client to kind of go into their lives and find out more about what it's like to dance a tango in their relationships. And so we're not even interested in, or actually, what I find is that we don't even need to make action plans for what they're now going to do, other than, hey, find some tango music, play with this metaphor. Well, maybe you'd like to go tango dancing for real. Like, go ahead, knock yourself out, but not with the expectation that the relationship is going to thrive because of that. It's more of a get to know that way of being. But what's interesting is that when clients step into their real life with these changed metaphors, because the war room was kind of now deserted and like lights turned off, door closed, it was like not an interesting place to be anymore. Is that the way that he then continued to walk into his life was having very different conversations with the people in his life, and that leading to a relaxation in his relationship, and that then leading to actually something starting to happen in terms of their connection, and then that starting to seed a very different way of being together and a very different experience of being in relationship. So that's one example.
It's rich, and it sounds very alchemical and organic, that the process is leading the way rather than the coach. And it reminds me of kind of like memory reconsolidation in the sense of like you can, I've forgotten the name of the author of the book. And it's an amazing book as well. We'll put it on the show notes, but this moving back and forth between an old state and a new state is what erases the memories and in a very kind of compassionate way. So, what do you think is happening here? And what about things like, the conditioning and trauma that might be bound up inside of the control room? It sounds very compassionate, but could you speak a bit about, about the
Yeah,
process?
absolutely. Yeah. So what happens is that it isn't just these two metaphors that are part of the process, because as you say, there are usually reasons why it became a war room, right? And there's parts of the mind, body, and soul system involved that kind of, it's like a ticking clock. It works the way it worked, right? So the relevant parts of that make themselves known in the session. So whether it's fear, or whether it's the voice of a father, or whether it's an experience as a child, these things kind of make themselves known, and they're also invited into metaphor. So we're as a coach, Where I think your characterization of the session was very apt. We're there to support the organic unfolding of this process, but with a very keen understanding of what to pay attention to and when to do what. And so part of our job is to make sure that these parts, and I'm calling them parts, but it's a very loosely defined part, these parts of their experience are being invited to be part of the mix with this understanding that, yes, they serve a purpose. Very often, they are something that is either handed down generations, even, or it's the way that a young child made sense of a situation and chose a coping mechanism without understanding the things that we know when we're adults. And so we invite them to become part of the journey. And so all of these are part of this reshuffling of metaphors. And very often when it's let's say the tango, like the music was a very important resource in making this transformation possible for this unique client. Like the way that our trauma experience, our traumatic experiences, or our conditioning from our parents, the way that they shape us and are part of our psychic structures, in the same way, we have access to everything that is part of creation or the world or life or whatever we want to call it. And so we all have access to resources that we're often not very aware of, but also they make themselves known in the session. So as a coach, I'm not going to go looking for, so what made it that it is a war room, or what can help you have this transformation succeed, or what's going to cement this. But I am listening out for when the signals come from the client's system. And when they do, that is when they get to have like a piece on the table. They get to have their own metaphoric expression so that they can become part of this. To me, like the whole process is like a dance. It's like orchestrating like a very very respectful, inclusive experience where everything is welcome. Everything that makes itself known is part of the dance, and where I fully and utterly trust on the wisdom in the client system. So I'm there to help them, and sometimes I talk about this work as being midwives for a change that is waiting to happen. So it's like what the baby comes out looking like whether they're going to have green or blue eyes or black eyes or whatever. It's not up to us to decide or even think about. So my attention as a coach goes to how can I hold that alchemical space? How can I pay attention to what is needed in this process so that this birth, in between brackets, can happen in a smooth way?
So, yeah, I love this because of the one of the things we've talked a lot about on the podcast is this shift between like a self-improvement agenda or paradigm where, it's often coming from parts of us that don't like the way we are. They feel a sense of lack. So they're the ones driving the process and it doesn't really work. You get stuck in the paradoxical nature of change. And so then there's this kind of unfolding paradigm where, and it sounds like your work is found in that paradigm where it's based in a sense of wholeness, and actually I found coaching in that way helps my clients land in a felt sense of wholeness. But it's really about being where you are, and the process unfolds by being where you are. And yes, having some useful distinctions and knowing how to hold a space like that as a coach is what's important. But once you can do that, then you're not driving any to any destination. You're allowing the process to unfold organically. And I think that what I found interesting about this way of working is it's often very trauma sensitive because you're not assessing what's unfolding as being right or wrong, or something that shows up shouldn't be here, that it needs to be healed in invert commas. And so I'm wondering, and another key thing I think that's fundamental is that what makes healing possible, what makes transformation possible is actually this ingredient of, we could use different words, but presence or the love, but it's, or light. It's like, it's, but it's when we disidentify from the parts and we access this space, which is larger than that, which is often has an unconditional regard. That's the healing agent. That's what can meet things without any agenda, with pure presence. And these parts feel seen, and they can transform. So I'm saying this to then set context for the question of, like, how do you see that in your work? And could you speak a bit more in detail about, say some parts start to show up around the control room, and they're like, "Hey, wait a minute, this is keeping him safe. We do this for a reason." How does that process of those parts changing happen?
It's a great question, and I think that unfolding and that unfurling paradigm for change. I know that I struggled with it, or at some point that's more than a decade ago, but still, because there is what it requires is a deep trust, a deep, deep trust that where the process is going to go is going to serve the client. And that is something that I think for most coaches, what I see with the people that come and study with us is a big change, actually, to really, really let go of the where is this going to go? And now with 20 years behind me, I know without a doubt, like without a single doubt, that what's coming forward through the client's system in this work, even if it starts from a self-agenda, a self-improvement agenda, but like there is it's a little bit like how plants kind of move towards the light. There is an inner, innate sense in us that wants to move towards the light. And I don't mean the light in terms of like the one and only true capital T light, but like into becoming who we are, like the whole of who we are. And that is the part that I trust. And that means that when some part shows up, or when an experience within the client shows up that is quote unquote resistant to the change that the client says they want to make, that's when I get really curious and interested about, okay, so what is the function of this part, this experience in the system? And very often it's about keeping someone safe, right? Whether from wherever that is coming. And this is one of the things that keeps this in the realm of coaching, is that we're not going to find out where it comes from. We're not interested in the story of how it came to be. Because what I found is that we don't need to. Actually, for 97% of the cases, like it doesn't matter. Because, and here I'm going to do a little bit of I'll give you some options of what it could look like, rather than go into the details of this particular story, because this has some individual sensitive things to it, which I don't have permission to share here. But for example, in a war room, it could very well be that there was like a general showing up that's like, oh, no, hang on. This is how we do life, right? This is important. This is how we keep safe. And so then we have the general in the room. We have the client in the room who's kind of has got kind of like a, there's a tango maybe out there happening, like, And so then it becomes like a conversation with the general, who's kind of like, well, yes, he wants to keep you safe. And there is the dance room with tango music playing. What would the general like to have happen? What would the tango like to have happen? What would you like to have happen? And giving a client a chance to kind of reorient themselves, kind of in the reality of all of this, and kind of think about, well, what is more important to me in this moment? Is it the safety that I've known or think I've known? Or is it that experience that feels much more alive to me? Something else that can happen is that we can start to look at, well, I'd like to go there, but it feels very very exposed, right? It feels very vulnerable. I need some kind of safety. Okay, what kind of safety would you like? Let's bring that into metaphor then as well. And that could look like in a whole, like we it could be like padding for the heart, or it could be like a little bit of like an extra shield in front of the torso. It could be like a love bubble. It could be like having a phone in the back of your in your back pocket that you could call the general if you really feel it was important. Like it could take as many forms as there is clients, and actually 100 more, because we can all come up with 100 ways in which that might work. But the process, I would say, is one of radical inclusion. So, and bringing the agency back to our client at all times. So the agency of our sessions is with our clients 100%. We start our sessions with asking, what would you like to have happen? And we go from there. So there is no interjection from my side about things I might have seen work for other people. You know, as a coach and trainer, I know a myriad of ways in which I could say, well, you could try this, or like, this is a nice, interesting model that could give you information about this. I could tell about my own experience. But I do none of that, because I know that whatever kind of, I was going to say solution, but like resources, is a better word, that pop up from the client system are going to fit their experience like a glove. And there's no moving or shaking that needs to happen. It's just that now they can just go and dance. And this is one example. I'll give you another example, which is a little bit more, which also touches on the mystery of this work. Because when we tap into this work, we tap into that field that has a much wider knowing, which kind of spans, you know, former lifetimes, guides, whatever is relevant for people's experience. So I'm not ever going to bring in, well, maybe it's a former lifetime, but it might well come in through a client who kind of becomes aware that that is actually real and true for them. But this is a client who was looking for a new job after being with her kids for a couple of years and kind of not really knowing what to do and how to enter the marketplace again. And so one day we're doing their, what would you like to have happen? Well, talking about it, and the metaphor that unfurled was this metaphor of walking and then seeing this big lake. And then there was this purple like sphere hanging over the lake. And that felt really good. And yeah, there was some stuff that needed to be dealt with, and worries and fears and all the rest of it. And what was really interesting is that after that session, in the next week, this client opened her local newspaper, saw a job advert of a company whose logo was like a blue thing with a purple sphere. And the job advert was for a role that she'd never have considered. But now she was like, oh, well, you know, let me just apply to this. And she got the job, and it was a great fit. So that happens too. So it's not the kind of stuff that you can guarantee, but it's just, I've seen change happen in so many, like, miraculous is a fun word to use. It doesn't really fit with corporate coaching, but the mystery is so alive when we work like this, because we humans are so much more than just our logical minds and the way that we create narratives of ourselves and our history and the things that we've experienced that are influencing right now. We are so much more than that. And something that I often say is that actually what I see is that our clients become radically resourced from within. And it's like they can plug back into like so much more that is available to them. And one of the fun things about it is that once people start to tap into this wisdom in their own bodies, because I'm not adding more words, right? We're not putting anything else in. They know what they share is true or not. Like they have a very clear inner sense of like, oh, I thought, like, I know I was thinking these things, but actually I know this to be true. So that's so empowering for our clients as well.
And I love what you name here around like this almost like non-linear magical element of transformation, which, you know, I think from a particular worldview, it's like it can feel like hard work and very incremental. And like lots of effort involved, to overcome particular ways of being. And there's something in that, but there's something about when you can open into something. It's like this, even the notion of like working hard to can just fall away, and then there's a kind of magic and inspiration that opens up, which is quite radical and brings this like re-enchantment back into life where I think we live in such busy lives where they can often feel this kind of pressure and sense of grind, to living. But there's different places from which we can live where we open into this kind of sense of magic and possibility more. I really want to take a stand for that.
Yeah, me too. It's that we so we've all grown up in cultures that glorify hard work, right? That is part of taking the stand. What taking the stand is for me is that actually that is not reality. Sure. Bringing, when I get up, there is still the chop wood and carry water aspect to life, right? It's just that there are things that we do that require a physical effort to make things happen. But we've kind of, in our cultures, we've kind of put that map of that part of life onto everything. And it isn't true. And I'm not going to say that that I don't fall into that way of thinking. But I truly have seen that there is no need for hard work when it comes to transformation. There really isn't. And does that mean that it doesn't feel emotionally hard sometimes? No, of course not, because all of life is part of this, which means that all of our emotions and all of the dealing with the really difficult situations that our world is in right now, the hopelessness that can surround that sometimes, like all of that is true too. But there's also what's also true is that we have a vast capacity for healing and for change within us. And therefore, and this is where I get my hope for our collective future, we also have within us incredible resources for our collective change. And part of that is unhooking ourselves from these paradigms that are that, you know, that we have in our blood, in every cell in our body, because that's just what we've grown up with, what our ancestors have grown up in. But we do not need lots of effort. What we do need, though, is as coaches, it's a very different kind of effort, because I can see it every time our clients go through our year-long training. I can see the moment when this clicks, because it's not a one-time thing. It's kind of like when you can learn to sit back and let the metaphors do the work. But to get to that stage, we have to quite brutally put our own ego to the side and have all the fantastic ideas and things that we think we know about our client's situation just stay with us. And sure, they inform me, right? Behind the curtain, they inform me about where I might ask questions. But also, I am very humbly reminded again and again and again that whenever I think, oh, I get what's going on here, actually, it's something else. And so that is quite a, that is hard work, retraining ourselves to be in the space where we can be in the receiving with our clients and being a witness to the change and being very deliberate in when we ask questions, what these are about, and why we ask them. So it's that's where effort does come in, and I find in learning the skills. But it is so worth it, because I see every time when I see my client, like one of my recent clients was coming in with like this lifelong theme that had brought her to burnout. She'd kind of recuperated when she found me and started working with me, gotten back into her job and just kind of noticing where it was really not working. And she was just kind of going around circle after circle after circle in our conversation or in our coaching session until, and this is because I was holding the whole thing, including the patterns that were part of this. There's this minute, this was her words afterwards, it's like this minute opening for a change appeared, and her system jumped on it and kind of turned itself inside out. And it was amazing to see. But I know that these things will happen because of my experience. And so she now finds herself, and she told me this a week after, just a couple of days ago. Session was last week, but like she's in such a different place now. And I can just hear it, see it, and I see it in how she operates in the world. And that just makes me like so happy that that's available.
I wanted to ask you about the embodiment side of this, particularly from a couple of different angles. Like one, you said that she's in a different place now. So that sounds quite potent in that, something opened up. I don't know how many sessions you did with her, but
One, this is the
just
first.
once. Yeah. And then that stayed with her. And so could you just say a bit about how that works, how people begin to embody the new, I don't know if it's the new metaphor or the ensouled metaphor. And also in the session itself, like what's happening on the level of embodiment? I imagine embodiment is an important like ingredient in every session.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the interesting thing here is that when most people hear metaphor, we think about like a linguistic structure that we've heard about in like high school at some point. But metaphors are a very core process for how we make sense of our world. So it's the process of expressing one thing in terms of another. So my relationship with my husband is like, actually, what is it like? Ooh, at the moment, it feels like this super yummy meal with lots of different choices and options, lots of spaciousness around it, and a lot of laughter. So, okay, my current metaphor for so that's the process of metaphor that happens. Now, maybe you can see that when I start to tap into that, and it's not something that I've thought about recently. But I can start to tap into the actual felt experience of my relationship with my husband. And it is something that is sparking, I could feel it sparking joy inside of my body. I could feel that I was starting to smile. I could feel that it was actually there was like a quickening happening through my system. A very a good kind of quickening. And so when we work with these metaphors that they just pop up in language, right? They just because they are literally what we use to make sense of. So in the English language, some metaphor, some research from Lakoff and Johnson that says the six metaphors a minute that just kind of pop up in when people speak. No different in other languages as far as I can tell. They are like a zip file for a full body experience, for like a wholly lived experience. And once we, st when they pop up once and we just don't pay the attention to them, they're not that yet. But once we start asking clean language questions about these metaphors, what kind of meal? Anything else about that meal? Where is the meal? Asking even more about the joy that was surfacing. Where is that joy? Well, that joy is like, actually, it's like fire sparkles kind of moving through my body, like light, fiery sparkles. Like that starts to engage all of my neurology. It starts to engage actually every part of the client's physical experience as well in that moment. And so these metaphors, they're not just ideas. They are actual living things. I don't know how to categorize them. So when I tell you that there's a big tree behind me as your client, I can feel that tree. I can actually lean into that tree. I can feel what the bark feels like. I can feel the heaviness of the ground underneath me, for example. Like all of these things can be brought to life. And this is an important part of the process, making sure that these metaphors start to take on this life, start to, and actually that's not quite the right way to express this, but start to express themselves as alive metaphors. And then we don't know where we're going to get, but it's going to be good.
Yeah, it's interesting because I've been talking with Peter Hawkins quite a lot recently, who has some really amazing radical challenges to how we hold what coaching is. In a way, saying like he's not quite saying there's no such thing as individuals, but he's pointing profoundly to the relational primacy of life, so for example, instead of asking what does the client want in a session, he's asking what's life wanting us to explore in this conversation today? And so there's a kind of profound systemic relational perspective. And the reason I bring that up here is because, that makes me wonder about these metaphors, because
Yes.
one perspective would be like, the modern worldview perspective would be like, oh, they live inside the mind of the client and they're just concepts. And okay, the concepts connect to the body, but that's it, but I don't buy
It's
that
not that.
worldview anymore. And I can
No.
see you don't either. It's like they're existing in something more fundamental and more
Yeah.
expansive than that.
Yeah, and I'm totally up for a radical conversation of what coaching is actually about on many levels. So, yeah, I love this. Yes, absolutely. And this is why, the logical levels model built God, Dilson and Bates. It's like the one of the NLP models for this. So it's like, when you think about how a client can change, it's about think about their environment, their behaviors, their skills, their up till the level of purpose. It's like the top of the pyramid. And it's that is all totally separated from the rest of life, right? And it is it makes us as coaches work very hard when we come at it from that respect. What we do is kind of add another triangle on top that says, actually, you have whether clients are aware of this or not, they have a relationship with source. They have a relationship with the more than human world, natural world. They have a relationship with, and we know this from biology, actually. They have a relationship through DNA. We have a relationship with our ancestors, and information gets passed on about what's important for survival into our matrilinear DNA. And so we have so much more than just the who am I, what can I do, in what contexts, and what skills do I need to do that, and like what's my action plan to get there. And these metaphors, actually, what I feel is in soul-based coaching, when I ask a client about what they'd like to have happen, the first answer that comes out of their mouth may be, maybe I want to get like a really good next evolution of my website going. And I feel blocked around that for whatever reason. It could also be, I struggle with this relationship thing, and I really want to solve this because I really long for healthy, lasting relationships that bring me joy. Like this might be words that come up from either a self, the improvement perspective, but there's always a little draw from that light that is inside of us that's like, no. Like, there is so much more possible in life, not just for you, just in life. There's so much more that is part of being alive. And I think that is part of what I see people draw, and that, where that comes from, I feel that comes through their soul, that comes through source, that comes through that much wider field that connects all of us. And these metaphors are absolutely related to that field as well, because these metaphors, they come up in language like they are like a very natural thing to say to the clients, But then they also at the same time have the capacity to really surprise them. It's like, really? It's like, yeah, it's like that. Oh, but if it's like, oh, I like this part of this experience, I'm not interested in like the war room and the gent, maybe not. But this part of that's actually really, really yum. I want more of that. Like, let's find out how that works. So I can see that even the clients, like with their, I could say their ego mind, start to be in a process of exploration with these metaphors, knowing, feeling that what these metaphors hold is truth, like a universal kind of truth. And part again of my role as a coach is to trust that the things that pop up in these metaphors are enough of the broccoli, so to speak, so enough of the fractal of the full pattern so that the change can start to happen. Because this is, of course, one of the things in systems theory that we want it to be as complex as it needs to be for the change to happen, but no more, because we're beautiful, complex beings. And this is where the metaphors really help us out, because they have a capacity to act as those zip files to really hold a big amount of stuff as one. And that goes straight to the client's physiology. And that then brings us to the embodied experience. So you can't unknow your metaphors. And if you can, it means that there's something else in the mix that still needs to be brought into view and realign itself. Yeah.
What I'm really appreciating here is, something I've been wondering about is, again, through my conversations with Peter, is like, what is it like to attune to like a systemic awareness, as a felt sense, not just as ideas, because I think what you're saying is interesting around like so we can tune into it a way in which it's complex enough for the transformation to happen. It's like, so we're systemic thinking or awareness would be a better way of saying it. It's like it can start to get very complex. What I'm passionate about is like, what is it like to tune in to have a systemic awareness on an embodied level, that where we're kind of attuning to that field of information, and in a way that's, we're able to I don't know what the right metaphor would be here, if it's like an acupressure point for like unlocking the transformational impulse within the system. But you get what I mean. It's like, how can we hold that systemic awareness so that evolution can occur? And your reflections and experience, I hear how embodied metaphor in this way, soul infused embodied metaphor, like could be a really useful or like powerful way to do that, actually. It's like, so
Yeah,
it's an interesting reflection.
it's what comes to mind actually is something, it's just a little thing of my, like a habit that I have or had that I worked with recently. Just I was at a conference, I was doing a workshop, and I just kind of joining in like one of the exercises. And so this was about a habit that I was not entirely happy with for myself. And this was and maybe some people will recognize this, at the end of a long day, sit down on the couch, kind of with my husband, watching TV. And I'm kind of finding myself like a couple of hours later, still sitting there, kind of going, why am I here? Because I'm tired. I should have been in bed like a long time ago. I think everyone has moments like that when we're kind of quite not making the choice that we know we probably should make. And as I was bringing this into metaphor, like this actually, it was bringing me a lot of joy to have that moment together. It felt like a very connected time, time out of the day and from some of the stuff that is happening in our family system. And I was just noticing how it felt like being in this lovely cocoon, like nice, warm, just kind of like being there. And And as soon as I realized that, it's like, no wonder I stay there, right? That's like a first insight. It's just, it felt so good. Is even when someone asked me, what would you like to have happen with that cocoon? I was like, well, I'm not entirely sure, to be fully honest. Like, this is bringing me something that I really value. But as I started, and this was 7 minutes tops, kind of going, oh, actually, if I stay too long, this cocoon kind of somehow ends up in the sea somewhere, and I open up the hatch and I have to swim back, and it's tiring, it's cold, like I'm not interested in that. So I need to find the point where I actually exit the cocoon, which is the right time to exit the cocoon, so that I can see the kind of the road kind of going to the right and up the stairs. And so what I needed was a little window in the cocoon. So like that, so that the road wouldn't disappear, and I'm just kind of nicely floating along in my cocoon. And ever since that happened, I can't sit on this on the couch in the same way, because there is now a window in the door. And I'm not saying this whole habit has now disappeared, but it kind of speaks to your, how can we have a systemic awareness of how we relate to our life, this thing that we're working with, and attune to it in a way that really supports us into making the change in a sustainable way. So metaphors that are embodied, that are soul infused. And I just want to say they're easy to get to, right? They're not just for a lucky few who do a lot of meditation, because this is part of us as human beings. This is just part of our makeup, how we're designed. It gives us so much insight. It helps us hold a whole rather than pieces. It gives us choice points, but also, if I were to choose to work on this metaphor of the cocoon again, it'd probably break it to and bring it into a way of being, a metaphor that would be even better to get both the rest I need and to honor the value that I get from having that time with my husband at the end of the
Yeah, I start to sense possibilities with that metaphor. It's
day.
quite good. Yeah, this has been a really rich conversation. And as we move towards the end of it, I'm just wondering if you could, I mean, the whole conversation has been a real pointer towards how we can notice metaphor and, the amazing possibilities you've been speaking about with it. But could you just say a bit more about how could we begin to recognize metaphors, in our own lives? And I'm not saying we can tell people how to coach in this way, that takes training, but just, yeah.
Well, okay, so I'll give you an exercise that we often do with people that are new to this, and that is to choose one quality of yourself that you really appreciate. So not one that you wish you had more of or that you could do better, but one that you actually really appreciate about yourself. And this is already a stretch for some people because problems are so magnetic to our attention. So one quality that you really appreciate about yourself, and then ask yourself, and that's like what? When I'm doing that at my best, it's like what? And just kind of muse on that question until a metaphor pops up. And you can ask him, what kind of cocoon is that? Anything else about that cocoon? Where, anyway, sorry, the cocoon is a wrong example because that wasn't a quality, but whatever the word is that you come up with, or one of the words, where is that? And just see where it takes you. So this is a way to explicitly work with your metaphors. Something else that's really interesting, especially in this day and age with elections everywhere and lots of political turmoil going on, is to just notice, because we're talking about soul-infused embodied metaphors here, right? And they're extremely powerful for our own path. But metaphor is powerful anyway because it very easily triggers all of these different senses that we have. So if it's someone else's metaphor, just start to notice how quickly they engage you, whether that is for the better or for worse, and to start noticing how you might also be influencing your clients with your metaphors? Because one of these soul-infused metaphors, they're very powerful, but they only get a chance when we don't kind of throw our own metaphors on top of them. Because then there's very few people that have the capacity to ignore that, not be primed, not be convinced by authority, not be in some way starting to think about how that might also be true for them, and really stay with their own information. So there's three things that people can do to start playing around with metaphor and seeing how powerfully they are present in our lives, even though we tend to think they're like just fun little things, but they're everywhere.
Yeah, Rich, I'm going to do that. I could feel the joy of some of the qualities I feel like I have. How potent that can be to, because I actually think, from a paradigm of wholeness, and if I've been influenced by, people like Steve March, who have these maps of depth, like parts, process, presence, and non-duality. And in this depth of presence, you find all these essential qualities like strength, joy, compassion, love, gnosis. There's actually tons of them, and these qualities are come with this sense of wholeness. And they're often a real antidote to the sense of lack that we've inherited. So I can just see a real possibility there to just sort of soak, in the quality of strength or in the quality of love. And there's many different types of love, and they unfold, as you do that, and the way you've described, they're unfolding and embodying more.
And you're make like, them, yeah. Yeah. And then once you start to do that, because that's just like a little entry point, what you can do is to really invite them into your life, right? So think about how you can play with them. Like if your metaphor for strength would be, I don't know, that feeling when you've done like a really like strenuous hike up a mountain. If that is like a metaphor for strength, then you can kind of go, where could I kind of do a little bit of that to just kind of have that embodied sense of strength in my life? Is that maybe at the end of a workout, or like, where, or is it like seeing and even watching a movie where someone else does that? Or is it like a soundtrack that reminds me of certain movies? Or so we can play around with it, and it will continue to feed those neural pathways in our system. And the more they get activated, the stronger they become, the more they're accessible, the more they're a part of your everyday kind of the makeup of your physiology. So, even if there's nothing that you want to improve about yourself, it can be a very fun way of radically resourcing yourself, because that's really, I think, what this work is about.
Yeah, thank you, Annemiek. It feels so exciting. So, yeah, I just want to thank you for being willing to kind of play with me and share your work, and it's just really rich. And where can we find out more about what you're up to?
Best place is academyforsoulbasedcoaching.com. That's subscribe to our newsletter, and we'll let you know about what's on store and what's in store.
Great. All right, thanks so much. Thanks for listening to the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training, The Neuroscience of Change. This program reveals the biology of change, showing us what happens in the brain and the body when different coaching techniques are used. You'll learn how to work with the innate pathways of change in all of us, so you can create powerful transformation with your clients. Just go to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by February the 7th. Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com. Put your name in the sign up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.